blogtalkradio.com. You can interact with the show by calling 760-888-5749 or use the hashtag PWPRadio on Twitter. Here are your hosts, Jay Leno and Will TLD Vafidez.
What's up, everybody? This is Jersey Strong Jay. Welcome to Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio, episode number 44. It's a new era in Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio as we have ditched the other shows. We've ditched, let's say the loose weight, so to speak. And there will be no more Pro Wrestling Obsession Live on this channel. There will be no more spoilers podcast on this channel because it's out with the old and in with the regular, I guess, because we're going to keep it with the PWP stars of the show. It'll be myself, TLD, JCD, and Tote from here on out. And we'd like to welcome you to this episode. We'll be talking about a lot tonight on PWP Radio. It'll be a two-hour live show. And some of the things we'll talk about is, you know, will Chris Sabin work as TNA champion? And what do we think about this apparent little change in the direction of TNA? We'll also talk about Daniel Bryan's impressive gauntlet match last night, Brie Bella's sweet nipple, the absence of the Big Show and the Wyatt family from Raw, RVD versus Del Rio coming up on SmackDown. Maybe that's a little hint at what our SummerSlam World Heavyweight Title match is going to be. Not really sure. But for hour two, we'll be talking about the history of SummerSlam, and I'll give you some statistics from the two big matches this year, CM Punk versus Brock Lesnar, the best versus the beast, and Daniel Bryan challenging for the WWE Championship by taking on John Cena. But first, you should head over to ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. Some new articles are up there. Another one will be coming tonight. So check them out and leave comments. I can't stress enough how important it is to get on there and leave your comments there rather than on the social media like Twitter and Facebook when I post them there. Go to the actual article. Just you can sign in through Twitter or Facebook to the Discuss system and get those comments rolling. We want to keep commenters on the site more often. Definitely join us on social media, at Twitter. Give me a follow, PW Powerhouse. Check me out. I'm almost at 1,000 followers, getting real close. My goal is to get there by SummerSlam. And if you're telling me you listen to PWP Radio, if you say, hey, Jay, hashtag PWP Radio, I listen to you and I'm following you because you're awesome or because you suck. Either way, it doesn't matter to me. I will give you an automatic follow back and a shout-out to all my followers as well. Which, you know, I know people have thousands, but, hey, we just started. We're only a year in, so it's not too bad. Also, please follow Will, TLD Vafidez, at TLD Wrestling on Twitter, and follow John, at JCD1219NY. My man Toph doesn't have a Twitter. He hasn't jumped on board yet. But you can find him on Facebook in the Pro Wrestling Powerhouse private group, facebook.com/groups/Pro Wrestling Powerhouse. And give us a like on Facebook, facebook.com/Pro Wrestling Powerhouse. Click that like button. They're going through the roof. Last but not least, our Amazon store. Please go over to ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. Check out our Amazon store. It's all over the place on the website. At the end of every single article, you will find our Amazon store. You click on whatever it is you want, whether it's a wrestling DVD, some panties, a bottle of whiskey. Not a bottle. You can't buy a bottle of whiskey there. A book, whatever it is. If you're trying to catch up on the Twilight Saga, go to our Amazon store, purchase it, and guess what? It'll just be like going to regular Amazon.com, but they'll give us a little small percentage of the purchase. The more purchases that you make, the bigger percentage we get. So please check out our Amazon store. Don't support Stone Cold Steve Austin with his show and his Amazon store because he's got enough money as it is. We don't need that. But we need the money. So hook us up. Go over to Amazon. Buy through the ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com store. And, hell, I'll even give you a shout-out. Maybe I'll even send you a DVD. I got a whole stack of DVDs I'm trying to get rid of. So let me know you bought something from the Amazon store. And maybe you'll get something from PWP Radio. You can also find the show on Stitcher Radio and on iTunes for your convenience. But the best way to listen to this show, on demand, right here at blogtalkradio.com/PWP Radio. Check us out always on Blog Talk Radio, and you can always call the show. Oh, man, I am worked up right now. I'm ready to rock and roll. You call the show at 760-888-5749. Talk to us about whatever the F you want. make any comment you want. Call in and talk to us right here, right now, live. But let's get this show officially on the road. Enough with the plugs. Enough with the BS. We are going to get this party started, and we will introduce my main man, my brother from another mother. He's going to host this show next week. I'm going to take a night off. So TLD will be your host, and here is Mr. TLD.
It's TLD. Yeah. Four-time tag team champion. I'm curvy. I'm cute. I'm a champion.
It's phenomenal to have TLD on the air. What's up, TLD?
It's always a phenomenal day when TLD's on the air. And not to mention that I know why we need a two-hour show, because you're going to be plugging all night. That was the longest plugging I've ever seen. And you forgot TLDWrestling.com. How could you put all the plugs for Pro Wrestling Powerhouse and not put one mention of TLDWrestling.com?
I plugged your Twitter, buddy.
It's in the contract.
I plugged your Twitter. I used to be happy I plugged your Twitter. But,
that's the same thing. People can, not everyone's on Twitter, but everyone has internet.
Okay, so here we go. Visit TLDWrestling.com and buy yourself a teddy bear. All right. Now let's continue our introduction. The ass man himself making his illustrious return here. Well, he's actually been on. He was on the show last week, but you know, he's got stuff going on in his life. He's doing stuff. He's got a new baby. He's working on houses, and oh, you didn't know, returns to the network right here in September. It's going to be a new theme show. We're going to be going retrospective style. Here he is, John.
I'm an ass man. Yeah, I'm an ass man.
John, what's going on, ass man?
Nothing. That was a great intro. I have no complaints about my intro. So I thought it was great. I love the long intro. So, you know what?
Should have been shorter.
I'm happy with everything. On one quick side note, Dixie Carter is doing an Ask Dixie section thing on Twitter, and some of the questions she's getting hit with right now are just absolutely hilarious. So if you get a chance, serious questions only to Dixie Carter, of course.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at what you just asked her, and I'm freaking about to laugh my ass off because, yeah, you go, Dixie, triangle, wood floor, or mohawk? That's an awesome question, John. That's spot on that. I put money on it. She's got a wood floor going on. That thing is probably solid.
AJ.
But, all right, let's continue, and we're going to bring in – he doesn't have a theme song. We were planning on getting Topa theme song, but he doesn't have one. So I'm going to scroll through all of our cool themes here, and let's just play one. Let's see what we got here. And here's introducing my main man, Toph. So it's a PS4 version of the Curtis Axel theme. What's going on, Toph? How's it going, brother?
Oh, I'm doing fine. I tagged you in a message last week, and I was asking your permission to give a pipe bomb, and you never gave me a reply.
I think I did. I'm pretty sure I did.
He did.
At some point. Yeah. If you want to go for a pipe bomb, if you want to drop a bomb right here live in the air, you have my full permission, so I'll hand it over to you. Go for it, my man.
Okay, well, I'm feeling a lot better about it now, because since then some things just cleared up. But there's a particular wrestling page on Facebook known as Wrestling Source. I have no issues with this page. I've been part of the page for a while now. It's a page similar to PWP. They just post information and updates. They don't spread gossip or nothing. And I've had no issues with the page. And last Thursday, something very out of the norm happened, and it pissed me off a lot. And basically, the person spoiled the result of the main event between Bully Ray and Chris Sabin, and I was pissed. And it wasn't the fact that they spoiled it. It was the way that they spoiled it. The status update said, and I quote, "Major spoilers, new champion crowned in main event." And then there was a link below of a picture leaked off of Twitter of Chris Sabin holding the TNA championship. And they basically spoiled it. And the administrator of the page was saying, well, if you just didn't click on it, you wouldn't have been spoiled. But in the status, he clearly spoiled it by saying new champion crown, because the main event was just a one-on-one match between Sabin and Bully Ray. So just by reading the status, by scrolling through your news feed, you saw the spoiler. This pissed me off, and so I actually private messaged the main administrator of the page, who I'm a friend with, and he informed me that it was actually a new administrator that had just got his position earlier that week, and he was, of course, dismissed. He lost his spot, and he apologized. The post was deleted. They made a public apology, so it's all good now. And this happened later on, like on Saturday. So I'm a lot more calm now, but at the time, I was very upset. So to anyone that's listening to this podcast, just a tip, if you're going to spoil something in wrestling, what you do is you press shift and you hit that little abstract key, and then you type major spoilers in caps, and then you press shift and then do that other abstract key, then you press enter and you leave about 20 to 35 dots. Maybe not that money, not that much, but you leave enough dots to the point where it actually says see more, you know, where you have to click on it to read the rest of it. And then after you leave 35 dots, then you put whatever the spoiler is. That's how you do a proper spoiler. You just don't directly, you know, just spoil stuff. I hate that in wrestling, you know. I'm not really a fan of spoilers. For example, I don't give two shits about SmackDown. I think it's a joke. Just because I don't care about SmackDown doesn't mean that other fans don't care about it. There's a lot of fans out there that watch SmackDown. There's a lot of fans out there that watch NXT. And if I wanted to, I could post spoilers and spoil the shit out of it every week. But I'm not going to do that, because who am I to take away the fun out of the people that enjoy the product? You know, it's the same thing. You know, this has got nothing to do with WWE, nothing to do with TNA. I just hate it when people blatantly spoil. So if you're going to spoil, do it properly. That's all I got to say.
All right. I agree with you 100%. I was spoiled on that.
Right,
I was spoiled on that, too. I went on Twitter, and the TNA was still going on. I was just about to start the show. I was DVRing it, right? And the main event had not ended yet on the version that was on TV. So I knew it wasn't over, because it was only about 10:30. And I hit my Twitter page, and this show called The Shining Wizard Podcast, which I really fucking hate. I don't know why I follow them. But they spoiled it blatantly a half an hour before the decision happened on TV. So, I agree with you 100%, Toph. I think that's it's shitty. I don't like spoilers. We don't like them. Nobody here really does. I think John reads them. I know TLD's against them, but I'm completely against them. I don't look at SmackDown spoilers. I know Raw is being taped this week. For next week, I'm going to try, like, the plague to avoid those, just because I like watching wrestling and enjoying it for what it is. But, very good. So, way to call that dude out, and it looks like something was done, and that's pretty awesome. But speaking of the topic that you were discussing, Chris Sabin, he's going to be the first topic we'll talk about tonight. And as you said, Chris Sabin is your new, brand new TNA Impact Wrestling, whatever the company's calling themselves nowadays, world champion. Now, Chris Sabin is a guy that I don't personally see as world champion material. I think he's got to prove himself at this point. I don't think he's proven himself to be a world champion quite yet. I think he's great. I'm a fan. I like him a lot. He's a little dude. He's got a different kind of swagger to him than a guy like Austin Aries does. Austin Aries got main event written all over him. He's in the main event for a lot of years in Ring of Honor and stuff like that. So he's carried a world title before. But Chris Sabin, you know, he's been a tag champ, and he's wrestling a lot of great tag matches throughout the years. And I kind of had a feeling he was going to win before the spoiler hit, because with this gimmick that they do, which I like, you know, handing over the X Division title for title shot, I think it's cool. It's their answer to Money in the Bank, but something kind of different. You know, I think it's sufficient if TNA continues to go on year to year that these guys actually win their matches. So Chris Sabin's your new TNA champion, and TLD, what are your thoughts on this outcome?
I wasn't too happy with it, I'll be honest. I think there's a lot more investment in Bully Ray being the world champion. Even though the match was great, I even think, oh, man, it's getting tough now. I mean, I was really all about TNA. I'm starting to kind of lose my edge a little bit on them. I did not agree with Chris Sabin winning the match. I think that he came back too quick. They're putting the belt on too quickly. I just don't see him like Austin Aries. I think Austin Aries is like their version of Daniel Bryan. At least that's how I look at it. But I just do not see Chris Sabin being a guy that you could say could carry the company and would be recognizable and be noticed. I think Bully Ray brought that championship belt meaning, and I don't think... I mean, I'm assuming he's going to get it back. I really cannot imagine Chris Sabin main eventing Bound for Glory. I just cannot see that happening. So I know I didn't read any spoilers yet, and I'm not going to, but I'm really hoping that it's just not, you know, Chris Sabin being main event at Bound for Glory. I just can't imagine it.
Well, the only thing I see here is Bully Ray drop the strap so he can have that match against Hogan at Bound for Glory, because you can't have Hogan win the TNA title. I know that everyone's been joking about that for a few months, and it's going to be Hogan versus Bully Ray, and Hogan's going to win the strap. I think if that match happens, the strap will not be on the line, and Hogan can win the match or lose the match, whatever would take place. But they shouldn't put the title on the line there. And I could see, seriously, honestly, see Sabin defending against Austin Aries on that show. I think that would be pretty damn cool.
That's not a main match, man. That's something I would want. I'm sorry, Chris Sabin's just not a guy that I see as a main eventer. I believe in Austin Aries versus Jeff Hardy. I just cannot believe, no matter who wins that Bound for Glory, if Chris Sabin's a guy, I'm not going to be sold on it right now. I just don't see him being a world champion. He's just not the type to be a world champion. He's just not. You know,
yeah.
I said the same thing about Daniel Bryan, like, years ago, or even, like, someone like Antonio Cesaro. I just do not see that guy ever being a world champion until he has something going for him. Right now, he doesn't have anything going for him, so I just don't see it.
I don't know. I don't know if you watched that Bryan Cesaro match last night, but I think if anything can change your mind.
We'll talk about that. Yeah,
we'll get to Daniel Bryan's three-match gauntlet in a little bit. But, John, we have a little bit,
There's more TNA problems right now than a world champion Chris Sabin right now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We'll talk about that next. But, John, what are your thoughts on Sabin defeating Bully Ray? Do you think this has any indication that Bully Ray is going to wrestle Hogan at Bound for Glory with the title not on the line?
If it does, it ruins the whole basis of what Bully Ray should have been. I understand Bully Ray Hogan has been teased as the payoff, but, you know, the whole point of him turning and him being revealed as the leader of Aces and Eights, the whole point of that storyline to me was supposed to be who was going to finally take the belt off him. Was it going to be who won the Bound for Glory series? Was it going to be AJ coming back after, you know, screw you all, it's P1, you know, and taking the title for himself? And, you know, I mean, I don't know. And if Bully beats Sabin, and I'm with Will on this, I don't think they're going to go Bully Hogan at Bound for Glory. I don't think Hogan can do it physically. I'm with Will on this. I think Bully will get the belt back at some point. But it kind of cheapens now whoever beats Bully at Bound for Glory, because Bully should have had this long, drawn-out reign. Aces and Eights should have had all the power. And then here comes whether it be a guy like Magnus or AJ or even someone who we're not thinking of to finally have that crowning moment. Now, you should have beat Bully because Chris Sabin beat Bully. You know, it's just, I don't know. And if Bully Hogan's the plan, then there's no one in that Bound for Glory series that I would be interested in seeing fight Sabin for the title. And that's more about Sabin with the belt. And I don't know who could come along and take that belt off Sabin to fight the winner of the Bound for Glory series. Part of me kind of thinks that maybe this title change was done just to kind of maybe put a little different focus on the company. It's like, okay, don't look at the fire over here. Look at the pretty little puppy right here, but the fire's still burning over there. You know what I'm saying? So that's where I stand on it.
Yeah, I hear you. Maybe it was a decision that wasn't supposed to happen until the last minute, too. You got to understand that TNA is also changing their creative direction a little bit with Bruce Pritchard now gone from the company. This could have been something that they did to just shake things up, so to speak. And who knows? Maybe Bully will win the strap back pretty soon. You know, TNA. I'm not buying how desperate they feel out. They seem out there with all these releases and stuff. I think they have, you know, more success and more money than we think they do. But you know, I think maybe this could be just a way to shake things up.
If they do, then that does not justify what they did today. Then.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We'll talk about that in a moment. But last thoughts on Saban defeating Bully Ray. What are your thoughts on this and the future of this TNA World Heavyweight Championship?
Chris Saban had a very good X Division run in the early days of TNA. A lot of good matches with Loki or Senshi, as they called him then. But back then, his X Division run, he was a great athlete, but he didn't really spark out to me like guys like AJ Daniels, Joe did. But I did enjoy his tag team run with Alex Shelley and the Motor City Machine Guns. I love that run. To me, that's when I started paying attention to Chris Sabin. That's when I started, you know, liking him as a performer. Because of his two ACL injuries, he was off TV for so long that when he finally returns, he still reeks of Motor City Machine Gun, which is not a bad thing. It's just when you've been off TV for so long, when you come back, you just subconsciously remember what they were when you last saw them, which was the Motor City Machine Guns. So obviously the build-up was not as good as it was with Aries and Bully Ray, or Aries and Rude, because last year they had, you know, Aries was the exhibition champion for a long period of time, and for the majority of his reign, he was taking out guys bigger than him, like Bully Ray, Abyss, and so on and so forth. So it doesn't mean as much for the victory. I think because of all the releases that TNA has been doing lately and because of all the bad things, I think what they decided to do was they decided to put the belt on Saban to kind of create some buzz for the company. Also, Saban is a TNA original talent, which is also good. And as far as not being able to take Saban seriously, you got to understand that fans said the same thing about Shawn Michaels. They said the same thing about Bret Hart. They said the same thing about CM Punk. The same thing about Daniel Bryan. I can name so many others throughout the years where fans said, I can't see this person as a world champion. But it turns out they became champion. They got some kind of new gimmick, and it all worked out. So we just got to wait and see where it goes. My biggest complaint is not with TNA. My biggest complaint is with these hypocritical fans saying that Chris Sabin's too small, because those same fans that say Chris Sabin's too small are going to be the same fans that mark out if Daniel Bryan becomes WWE champion. Chris Sabin and Daniel Bryan are the exact same height. You don't believe me? Look it up. Go to ImpactWrestling.com. Go to WWE.com. Go to Wikipedia. They are the exact same height. Get this. Daniel Bryan is only 6 pounds heavier than Chris Sabin. They are the exact same size. Hell, John Cena, he sucks in his promos, and he even acknowledged that last night, that you've had guys like Rey Mysterio, Eddie Guerrero, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, hell, even Benoit, if you took away the muscles, he wasn't that big either. He was kind of short. So let's just stop this, oh, you're too small to be champion. Any excuse of being too small, that went to hell as soon as Rey Mysterio won the title. So let's just get this, oh, he's too smart, out the way. That's just stupid. But, yeah, congrats to Saban.
I don't think he's too small. I'm not going to say that whatsoever. I just think TNA right now, with putting the strap on him, I think it was something they were going to do. I actually thought they were going to do it. But I'm not sure if it's going to be that long of a run at this point. I don't see him having a 6 month type of run. We'll see how it works out. I think one thing that he should do, which I think is necessary, because Bully Ray, if you look at the weeks, you know, the past few weeks and whatnot, Bully Ray really doesn't wrestle that much. Especially, he doesn't really defend that TNA Championship that much. He never really defends it on Impact. I think if there's anything you can do with Saban, is you could kind of handle him the way WWE handled Bret Hart back in 1993 or whenever he won his 1992, whenever he won the strap and had a long run with it, he was defending that title all the time, constantly on TV, whether it was Superstars or whether it was some kind of stupid match against whoever on a video release. He was more of a fighting champion than maybe Hulk Hogan was before him, because Bret was always defending that thing on TV, whereas Hogan was just defended on special occasions, whether it was Saturday Night's Main Event, a pay-per-view, a big show, something like that. But Bret Hart
To finish this up, the one thing that I will give Chris Sabin, not Chris Sabin's, but the title reign in general, is when Bully Ray had it, I think we all pretty much had Hogan Sting in our head. We thought that it was going to lead to AJ Styles somehow being the savior and, you know, kind of replicating what Hogan and Sting did. But now that Sabin's the champion, and if we go into the assumption that he's going to be the champion for a decent length of time and Bully Ray's not going to get it back, then this really kind of is a big head-scratcher on the Bound for Glory series. I've been paying attention to AJ Styles' promos, and at first we kind of dismissed it and just kind of, you know, we kind of labeled it as like kind of a Sting ripoff. But if you actually pay attention to AJ Styles' mannerisms and the way he cuts his promos, I'm actually seeing more of a Raven-ish vibe, like an ECW Raven Nest or the Flock. You know, I'm seeing more of a Raven thing. You know, he's kind of hanging out in the bowels. He's all dark. He's kind of no-selling in his promos and his matches, openly talking about how there's no such thing as a hero and saying it's all about the money. You know, cuts his promos like as if he's asking the crowd a question. I think AJ might be going more of a tweener Raven vibe, because Raven was never really a heel. He was just kind of a, I mean, he did a lot of dastardly stuff, but he never at any point, like, addressed the fans like they were crap, as if they were, you know, like most heels would. But that's just the way I see it so far.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, but I saw that a little bit too, man. I didn't think of it until you mentioned it, and it's a good point. You know, maybe they're going in that direction a little more with AJ, and I think he's a top candidate to possibly win the Bound for Glory series, and that's a match that could work at Bound for Glory. AJ versus Sabin. It probably won't be the main event headline of the show, but it could fall somewhere like the co-main event, something along those lines. Or it could be the main event.
Jump
they could put on a great match. Yeah, jump in.
Can I just add one more thing to Sabin? And I know you could say this about any superstar at any time, but one of the other things that you got to keep in the back of your head, especially if he actually starts to build a little bit of a long title reign, is how fast can those knees go? And I know anyone can get hurt at any time, but with his history, that's another thing. Like, what happens if they do make the decision to go with him at Bound for Glory? And all of a sudden, let's say, I don't know, on a Friday night in late September, there goes the ACL again, you know, because those things never heal the same. Then it's a risk you got to keep in mind, especially with somebody like him, you know. And like I said, I know it can happen to anybody at any time, but just that's something you got to be concerned about with his history.
Yeah, you can definitely see that his style is slowed down. You can compare Sabin to Edge. You know, when he came back from the ACL, Edge's style toned down. He didn't do as many aerial high-flying moves. Sabin's new offensive style is more ground-based. So, you know, that's how it is when you come back from an ACL injury.
Well, things are changing in TNA wrestling, it seems, by the week. You know, talents are being released. They have a new CT, head of talent relations, whatever you want to call Bruce Pritchard's spot right now. He has been released today. Jesse Sorensen, we all know him as being an X-Division star when he was around, and he suffered the broken neck at the hands of Zema Ion. It was an accident. It was an accident. You know, it happens. Shit happens in the ring. But Jesse Sorensen was released from the company after Dixie Carter did state publicly on Twitter and via her own voice that Jesse would have a job for life with the TNA Wrestling organization. So he was released from his contract. He was working somewhere in the accounting department at this point. Maybe that's why they're books are bad. Who knows? But he was released, and, people seem to be overreacting a little bit. You know, they've released lesser-tier talent. Like, D'Lo Brown got released. Gallows got released. He was only around for about a year, so I figure he had, like, a one-year contract. But when we start seeing major stars getting released, I think that's the point where we should panic a little bit. Right now, we're not in panic mode. But TNA has done a lot to really change their landscape over the past week, 2 weeks or so. And TLB, just want to let you know, man, just want to ask you, man, what are your thoughts on TNA doing this and kind of changing their direction a little bit?
Boy, man, I got to tell you, I don't know why there are people they're releasing that I would not have saw being released you know, I just don't get it, like, why you let someone like a Matt Morgan go after you just had him on TV for a week, or a guy like Crimson, you just had him on TV, and then you release him. It's like, a lot of these releases and the timing of them just don't make any damn sense. Luke Gallows, on that one, I was pissed about, because if there was somebody who was like aces and eights, he was the second member revealed. And if anything, they were just starting to build something with him, and then they just threw it away and released him. And then you talk about a guy who had a serious neck injury, almost got paralyzed, you know, and she goes on TV, talks about him getting a job for life, and I'm sure they were going to lead to a Azimia Ion, Justice Orison feud, and now that's obviously kicked to the curb. You know, it's not, I mean, I would not be, the people I would be releasing are the people that we don't see on TV. You know, that, you know, Luke Gallows was a big mistake on deleting. I don't understand him. You know, I mean, even like a guy like Eric Young, who is not even on TV that often, you know, why does he still have a job? He's currently on another channel, you know, doing his own thing. You know, there's just some people on this roster I just don't understand why they're still here. It just doesn't make any sense. Not to mention, they just got Rampage Jackson, and right now that hasn't really kicked in for them yet. So, I mean, honestly, they've had a big roster. They need to get rid of some people, and I agree with getting rid of people. I just don't know if I agree with the people they got rid of, especially around this time. You know, right now Kenny King's not doing anything. You know, Sam Shaw's not doing anything. Rockstar Spud, who got hired from that English show, he's not doing anything. Ron Terry's not doing anything. Why get rid of people who are in storylines? Like D'Lo Brown and getting rid of Doc, especially in the Aces and Eights, which right now looks like a really weak stable. I don't know. It's just it's really weird how they're doing it. I understand why they're doing it. It's a cost-cutting measure, but if you have guys like Sting and Hogan and Kurt Angle, and they've been in that show for so many years, and there's never been a needle jump on that rating slot, then obviously there is no reason to keep these guys, because they're not doing anything for the product, at least in my opinion. The only person they should keep is Jeff Hardy, but anybody else, honestly, I think is expendable.
Well, you know, we talk about who's expendable and who's not, but I've heard from numerous sources, and I'm trying to confirm this, but I hear every time Hulk Hogan appears on that show, he's getting something like $15,000. Something along those lines. Like, he gets a huge amount of money from TNA Wrestling. And if you look at that, you know, there are certain individuals in that company, lower tier guys, who I've heard get paid like $200 a night. You know, I'm just talking to Eric Pleska from Pro Wrestling Syndicate. I just asked him about this Hogan booking fee right now. And he has said that, he just told me this right now. I asked him if Hogan gets about $15,000. He said it's actually more. He's heard like $30,000, to be honest. That's a lot of money to book Hulk Hogan, to have him on your show.
That's a lot of money, man.
It's huge money. You know, huge money.
That's crazy.
And
that is beyond, like, why, what is Hulk Hogan, besides the H&A storyline, bringing right now? I just do not understand.
He's always been this way, though. Hogan's always been this way.
Dude, I get the guy's an icon, but if he's a brand, and the brand hasn't, like, jumped your brand, you know, it's what is the purpose of keeping him? And Brooke Hogan on top of it, because once Hogan goes, Brooke probably gets paid more than some of these guys.
Dixie Carter has said, and I do believe her on this, is she says that ever since Hogan has joined, when they make their posters, you know, if you actually go on ImpactWrestling.com and you go on their tours and stuff, one of the more underrated things about TNA is they actually have very good posters. And just go on the ImpactWrestling.com, go on the tours whenever you're bored, to anyone listening, just check out some of the posters they have. But Dixie Carter said on Twitter that ever since Hogan has joined their company, when they use their posters to advertise, when they use Hogan, they've been accepted in many more venues that in the past turned them down, all because that Hogan was on the poster. So I do believe that Hogan is helping them as far as increasing their revenue on where they can perform. But that one positive out of multiple negatives is really one of those questions where you kind of have to ask, is it worth the risk? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
no,
then
I
you
wonder.
Get a rookie. But hang on a second, though. Then when Hogan doesn't show up to that house show in, you know, Tupelo, Mississippi, but he's on the poster, you just pissed off an entire market that, you know, that was your first shot at. As, you know, so that's the other thing, you know, you got to keep in mind, too. I've heard the Hogan number is high, kind of like, you know, I mean, I never heard it was 35, but, you know, that's a ridiculous number. And you know what? This is why he didn't appear at WrestleMania 23 in Detroit. This is why he didn't appear at WrestleMania 25, because Vince just knew the investment just wasn't worth it. It just wasn't for what he was asking, and Vince put his foot down. So you know what? As you could say it's Hogan for being that crazy and saying, I need this amount of money to show up, brother. But you know what? At the end of the day, it still takes a second person to say, yes, I will give you that money. And you know what? Vince, after the 15th anniversary of Raw in 2007, turned around and said, it's not worth it. And you know what? That, you know, Dixie's never going to do that, because Dixie, and I've written articles about this, Dixie's biggest problem, and this is going to be the death of that company, Dixie cannot separate Dixie the fan and Dixie the businesswoman. And that's going to be the death of this company. I put a poll up on the page earlier this week. You got Hogan, Sting, Angle, and Hardy, who are probably the four biggest money makers in that company. You got to get rid of one. Who do you get rid of? And she will never, in a million years, except for Sting, because she's so egotistical, okay, even though she tries to hide it with that little, like, ha-ha, okay, she'll turn around, she'll let Sting go, let Sting sign with Vince, and then turn around and actually have the audacity to say, I let him go to let his career come full circle. As far as the releasing talent thing, Will nailed it right on the head. Releasing guys that are in storylines, like the Aces and Eights guys, is absolutely stupid. Okay, I understand Morgan asked for his release. Some of those people are claiming they asked to go. So if you asked to go, I'd rather have you not be here than rather have you be here and not want to be here. But now if you look at that roster, sans of Rob Terry, and I think Will said it, Rockstar Spud and Sam Shaw, I think there's like one or other guy on that roster right now. After that, after you cut those people, the next person you cut is relevant, okay, is a relevant player. You're looking at your Chavo Guerreros, your Hernandezes, your Nux, your Briscoe, your Bischoff, your guys like that. And Bischoff's never going to get released as long as his dad's still there.
Oh, God, that's another person that brings nothing to the Aces and Eights right now at all.
Right.
I mean, granted, they've always had a lot of people on that roster, and I understand why, but, man, they got a lot of people they just aren't using, and there's no purpose. Like, even Eric Young, to me, Eric Young, as great of a talent as he is, he's already got a show, which he is probably going to make more money on and doesn't need
than
TNA
he is in
anymore.
TNA. You're right.
You know, they don't need him anymore. You know, but you're right. There's one. If there was one big guy to release and not have anymore, Sting would be my first option to get rid of, because I don't think Sting is going to bring any more to the product that he does now, especially after I saw how the Main Event Mafia is turning out. He's definitely not needed anymore.
And the whole angle with that is stupid. The whole basis of that angle was no one helped him at, what was it, Slammiversary?
Yeah.
Okay. Yet you've got, except for Rampage Jackson, who's just a big waste of a paycheck, and if you saw what Rampage said about 2 weeks ago, he even came out and said, I'm not wrestling anytime soon. I still have MMA to do. Okay, I'm not going to do both at the same time. Everyone who has joined the Mafia was at that show, was on that show. So you kind of made Sting look like an idiot. And if you read some of Sting's comments over the last couple months, he's even kind of wondered where, you know, they're going with him. But, you know, you can't sit there and say, you know, it's not that bad. If it's not that bad, then you can't justify releasing a guy like Sorensen, a guy who literally broke his neck for the company. How do you sit there and justify having Zema Ion sit in a hospital bed, and you know what? You can't put a dime towards his medical bills. You know what? Say what you will about Vince. Vince would have taken care of Sorensen for life. Vince would have picked up Ion's hospital bills. You know, and I know, you know, everyone, I saw a lot of people today getting on Vince about, you know, oh, well, Vince released Test when he was getting a neck fusion surgery. Yeah, Test was getting neck fusion surgery, but Test was also one of the guys who was just being looked at as, especially coming off the whole Benoit situation, yeah, you need to lay off the juice there, pal. You know, so the whole Test thing was a little different, but you can't justify what they did to Sorensen today. You can't. And, you know, they had meetings, supposedly. Everybody's on being reevaluated. If I'm a guy that's been there for that long and I'm being told I'm being evaluated, I'm asking for my release too. You know, like I said, there's about three more guys left who you can say, okay, they're not doing nothing. After that, it's main-level talent. And when they get to that route, that's when they're going to be screwed. And I don't want to hear that the one-night-only pay-per-views was what broke your bank account. Then you know what? You shouldn't have done 8 pay-per-views in 2 days.
A great point. You figure if you're doing 8 pay-per-views in 2 days, now it's not what broke their bank account, but if you're bringing in that much talent.
Oh, that's what
remember,
she told people, though. That's what she told people.
That just doesn't make really any sense at all, in my opinion. I mean, how can that break your bank? Because that is a huge long-term investment, so you haven't even had a chance to recoup that money. If you have any accounting sense whatsoever, that money is still sitting there in limbo. You've spent that cash, but your hopes are to make that cash back and more with these pay-per-view events. So wait until after all these pay-per-views air and then come out with that statement. Don't say it now. It makes her sound like a fucking idiot again. And
on a more positive note, I've noticed none of you have brought this up. Kind of a sleeper thing. Props to TNA for using Trent Beretta on Destination X last week. He looked really good, and I hope he gets signed. He'll definitely bring a breath of fresh air to the X Division in the future.
Actually, no, Toph. I'm glad you went there. You know what? If I just got released and I see that they bring in Trent Beretta, Homicide, Jigsaw, you know, not that those guys don't deserve chances, but you're telling me you're cutting costs and that's why I don't have a job. It's nothing, but yet I see you. Hey, these guys, say what you will, even if they're not hired, these guys still have appearance fees. You still got to pay these guys to show up. You're paying these guys, even if it's only for one night, which is 2 tapings. So of course, you know, if you work a double shot of Impact, you get paid twice. You know, how do you sit there and justify that? Okay, you're cutting me because there's a lack of money, but yet you're spending extra money on those guys when you have guys that sat on their asses Thursday night when those 2 shows were taped and could have gotten used in that X Division tournament.
Mike, who? There's no one left.
Okay. You could have put Shaw on the tournament. You could have put an Aces and Eights guy, as bad as they are. You probably could have put Bischoff in there just to create the prospect of what if Aces and Eights take the X Division title. All right? There were guys you could have used.
None of those guys are X Division guys.
There's
a weight limit now, remember?
Small enough. You know,
I wasn't really talking about the money. I was just really just giving TNA props for allowing them to use Trent Beretta.
I'm just saying, though, if I'm a guy that, yeah, but you know what? Beretta was a part of a bunch of guys that were brought in for that show. And if that's what I'm saying. If I got cut because of money, but yet I see you bringing in an outside talent, I'm pissed off.
Yeah, you know, you make a great point, John.
I think we're upset with TNA's decisions.
Yeah, probably, man. I mean, Trent Beretta is a great talent, and he's a fresh face for the company. But I guess it remains to see if he's been signed or not. If he pulls that X down from the Ultimate X match, which we probably should have had on last week's show instead of having, you know, 3 promos, in-ring promos on the show that were pointless, then, you know, that's one thing. But we're just going to change gears a little bit now, and we got 15 minutes till the top of the hour. We're going to start out a little bit of WWE talk, and I know that's what everyone's been waiting for. We covered a lot of TNA, and we'll continue to cover TNA. That's what we do here on Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio. We talk about it all. We don't talk about Ring of Honor really that much because Ring of Honor blows. So let's talk a little bit about WWE, and we'll kick it off with last night's Raw. And Daniel Bryan, man, this is one thing that just completely shocked me. And I cannot wait to see the ratings because that will tell you whether or not Bryan is a draw. I think this was part of a little bit of a challenge. It was a challenge on TV. That was the storyline, but I really think it's a real-life challenge for Daniel Bryan to see if he can hold that rating for that half hour or more he had last night in those three matches. He defeated Swagger in pretty quick fashion, which I'm not surprised on because that dude's got to be in the doghouse for getting getting arrested during WrestleMania season like a moron. And then he had a fantastic match with Antonio Cesaro. This is a match I've seen a bunch of times back in the day in Ring of Honor when Ring of Honor was good and relevant. And they can put on a hell of a show, and we saw that last night on Raw. That match they had stands right up against those Ring of Honor matches that everybody has praised. Any Ring of Honor fan for a long time has praised those matches and loves those matches, and that match is just as good, if not better. And then we had Ryback, and once again, Brian brings out the best in Ryback. They had a solid match. Of course, Brian didn't get the win. But let's talk a little bit about this, and kick off with TLD, man. Daniel Bryan showed us a lot last night. Three matches in a half an hour. He was going hard the whole time. He didn't really give up, but he did not get the pinfall win over Ryback. He won by disqualification. And what do you think is going to happen, Will, if this rating comes in and it completely blows? If the rating just goes down, do you think WWE is going to panic in any way, shape, or form?
Well, as far as the performance of Daniel Bryan, it was terrific. It was terrific. It was a work of art. And, you know, I'm sure that guy got a lot of applause when he went right in the back. Not to mention, I believe he was also involved in the dark match also. So he wrestled at least 40 minutes for the entire night in a row. That's just pretty impressive. That's pretty tough to do. And for me to go 10 to 15 minutes is already kind of tough. And especially when you're trying to chant yes and you have a lot of drive and motivation to do that on top of still, you know, being able to kick and still say yes, just as good as you did like 20 minutes earlier. Amazing. A wonderful job. Obviously, he's over like $1 million. He's over like crazy, you know. I just don't see any momentum stopping him right now. But they're doing a great job with the storyline. Obviously, Vince McMahon's getting in the head of Brad Maddox, and they're putting a real-life situation kind of together here where Vince McMahon believes in the man who can run his company, which is John Cena, and he sees Daniel Bryan as a guy who's going to completely ruin his business, where they could, if there was a rating drop, they could totally use this in the storyline, which would be pretty interesting and pretty different. You know, I think it was a great performance. And the Antonio Cesaro match was great. Even all three matches I thought were great. They all had their purpose. Even Ryback had a great match with him. I thought Ryback was killing him, and he looked great throughout the entire match. So you really can't say that Daniel Bryan didn't do a great job. You couldn't say that you weren't entertained by it because it was so much fun. I mean, people will watch that and want to be in a crowd and do those yes chants with Daniel Bryan. That's something that you just want to do. And me and my girlfriend were sitting here and watching that, and we were just like, we want to be there and do that for him just to get him the motivation to keep going. It was just really awesome. Now, as far as the ratings go, I am looking on a website about the ratings, and it does show that hour three was not as good as hour two. But it was slightly better than hour one, slightly. So I'm just reading that now. So I think that kind of tells you right there that could be – I'm not saying it's an issue, but what I'm saying is that it wouldn't have mattered what he did because obviously people were tuning in that second hour rather than that third hour, and that's obviously because at 9 to 11, that's when people are accustomed to watching it. But I don't think it means anything for me anyway. But at least what they did do – is that next week we actually know what's going to happen on Raw, because I hate when WWE does not talk about their next week's show. At least now next week we already know Daniel Bryan and Kane are going to fight, and we're going to have a tables match with John Cena and Ryback. So I'm looking forward to next week because I actually know what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's definitely a positive that they did. I talked about that a little bit last night on Twitter. Definitely a positive for WWE. The ratings drop for hour three, I don't think it's going to affect anything because that drop is so small. And it goes back to what Vince Russo has always said, and I'm a fan of Vince Russo. I admit it. Vince Russo was awesome, and I'm a big fan of his. And he always said, the second you put on a rest hold on Monday Night Raw, the second somebody gets in that rear chin lock, the casual fan changes the channel. And I think he's right in a way, shape, or form. You know, once that, that show gets a little bit boring, you know, then that's when people tend to look for something else to watch on TV. And during, like, a three-match stretch like that, we get that a couple times from Brian. Toph, what are your thoughts on Brian's three matches last night on Monday Night Raw?
You touched the beginning of it. Man, if you had any doubt that Jack Swagger wasn't in the doghouse, that doubt went away. Man, I went to the John, came back. It was over. Swagger was disposed of so quickly. And then for Brian to have a Ring of Honor style-based match that goes over 25 minutes, where Cesaro looks just as good as Brian. I mean, clearly, that whole point of that was just to show you who WWE is more interested in right now. Swagger. Oh, poor Swagger. But, hey, he's married to a porn star, so I don't feel that bad for him. The match was fine. Also, shout-outs to Alex Riley for getting on TV for 15 seconds. I like how Alex Riley said the kid's good when him and Brian are the same age. Might want to reword your phrasing next time, Riley. And as far as the ratings go, if the ratings are bad, history has told us that if the ratings don't go too well, when they're experimenting, it usually doesn't end up that well. I kind of remember the Raw after TLC in 2011 when it was Ryder, Brian, and Punk, and that whole segment just flopped, and it didn't end up too well for Ryder, and Punk got put on the back burner for a long time, although Brian came out of it just fine. So, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, I think it's funny you mentioned Alex Riley because, you know, I saw it immediately when I saw Riley standing next to Brad Maddox. I was thinking about Val Venus as Chief Morley. I was thinking, you know, Chief Riley. It kind of it's got a ring to it a little bit. Maybe Alex Riley can be Maddox's chief of staff. Maybe you'll see some kind of friendship between those two evolve from a 15-second little cameo on Monday Night Raw. But,
what's great about Riley is it makes Miz so hilarious because Miz is directly in the middle. Miz has two protégés. First, he has Daniel Bryan, and when it first happened, it didn't look good for Bryan, like he's going to be a joke. And now Bryan's basically a demigod in terms of being over. And Miz is like in neutral, not really a face, not really a heel. And then you have Alex Riley, his second protege, who's like not even on TV. So it's like Riley, Miz, and Bryan. I like that trinity, the holy trinity of super over, not really over, and just not even relevant. It's just great.
Alex Riley was over for like 2 weeks, man. He got some serious pops when he turned on The Miz. And you really thought that his career was going to shoot up through the roof. But, of course, he screwed up, man. You can't get a DUI when you're wrestling for WWE. That's just stupid.
Of course.
It's going to take a while. Yeah, it's going to take a while for you to get out of the doghouse, if ever. We saw
that and standing up to Cena.
Oh, yes. We'll talk about that on a later date, though.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. John, man, your thoughts on Daniel Bryan's performance last night, and, you know, what would you think, man?
Well, I thought it was awesome. I watched it, and it was just, oh, wow, awesome. As far as the ratings, I'll do you one better. I actually have the quarter-hour breakdowns for Bryan's segments, and Bryan's segments actually went up each time. He started at a 2.8. Raw did a 2.94. He started at a 2.8 coming out of the RVD match, went up to a 3 for the Cesaro match, and then the overrun did a 3.2. So if you're looking at what did Brian do in his shot, he actually brought the rating up, which is actually a good sign for what his future can hold. You know, remember, you know, 10 o'clock starts the hour. He didn't start at 10. He started about 10:25, so he had about 25 minutes worth of other stuff ahead of him. So the good news is the ratings were good for his segment. That Cesaro match, man, if Cesaro's not earning his worth between that match and supposedly he had a match with Sami Zayn in NXT, a 2-out-of-3 fall match that everyone is saying without a doubt is going to be the match of the year. If he can't get anything going after SummerSlam, I don't know what more the guy has to do.
I think Cesaro's proving that he can get something going. It's just a matter of time. I mean, he's stuck kind of in this mini stable with Swagger and Dutch Mantel. I think the way you eventually get that guy over is you have Swagger Dutch Mantel, Zeb Coulter. You have those guys turn on him. that's the way you get Cesaro over. You turn him babyface in due time. He can work babyface. People, if any of you guys out there have watched Ring of Honor, you would have seen how he can work as a babyface. And he was way over, man. The crowd loved him. He had this little chant he did. It wasn't like a yes, yes, yes. It was more of like a, hey, when he raised his hands in the air. And the crowd did it along with him. They ate it up. Whenever he laced in a European uppercut, they'd go, hey, hey. And hey, something as simple as that, a stupid hey, can get over big time on Monday Night Raw, as we've seen with yes and no and see and whatever else they use. So I think that will ultimately be your way to dig Cesaro out of this hole. As long as he keeps putting on these awesome matches and guys like Jim Ross continually puts this guy over. He says that this guy can be put in any generation and would have worked anywhere in wrestling history. That's a huge coup, man. Jim Ross is a guy who's responsible for many of the WWE legends and different developmental talents that have been just absolutely awesome. We're going to go to the phone lines real quick before we hit the top of the hour. We're going to go to 860 area code. It looks like Nate is on the line right now. Nate, what's going on, my man? You're live on the air, Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio. What's going on, brother?
Hey, yeah, I'm doing good. Just listening to you guys online. Oh, man, I just got to say kudos to CM Punk and Paul Heyman, because basically that segment, the Daniel Bryan match, has pretty much saved Raw, because Raw was just pretty much crappy. I mean, the Diva segment, come on, you had to have a nipple to save that segment. And, I mean, I don't know. I'm just looking forward to the Brock Lesnar CM Punk match at SummerSlam. I know it's not going to be the main event match, but hopefully it's a good match. And I don't know, maybe there's talk of maybe making a two- or three-match feud with Lesnar and CM Punk. But, yeah, I'm just worried about Daniel Bryan's popularity getting more popular than John Cena, and they turn him a heel. I just hope that doesn't happen, because they already did it twice before with CM Punk and Ryback. But I just want your thoughts on that.
Well, you know what, man? I don't think it would matter at this point, to be honest with you. Whether it's heel or babyface, it's just the guy is just so over and then just working out really well that I just don't think it would matter at this point.
And let's be honest, when did Brian ever actually turn face? He never did anything to turn face. The crowd dictated that he's our guy, and we're going to cheer him no matter what you make him do.
Yeah, I really don't think there's any way he's turning heel. If there's, like, rumors out there that say he might in some way, shape, or form turn heel at SummerSlam or something along those lines, then I don't buy them at all, because there's just so much money right now in merchandising with this guy that it just wouldn't make any sense. And let's face it, he's not a heel, man. He can work heel. He can be a great heel, but he's proven that there's a lot more money in him being a babyface. So I think the general consensus out there is predicting that Daniel Bryan's going to win the WWE Championship at SummerSlam. But I think win or lose, he's going to come out better, because ultimately I see Bryan having a huge WrestleMania moment at WrestleMania 30, but that's long-term booking, that's looking way ahead. I think Triple H really went out on a limb last night and said it live on the air. And you got to believe that those kind of comments are true. He said that Daniel Bryan is pretty much, in layman's terms, fucking phenomenal. The guy is great. He's just unbelievable out there, and I've been a fan of his since 2004, so I'm not jumping on any kind of bandwagon at this point. I've been one of the many out there who have been fans of him for a long time that have been standing up to these idiots, and no offense, TLD, but you were one of them, that just didn't buy into Daniel Bryan in the beginning. And I kept saying that, you know, this guy is the real deal. He's awesome. He can do anything. He can talk on the mic. He can perform in the ring. He can do anything. But WWE just didn't realize that until they let him go.
You call me an idiot? Live on the air?
Let's not make this about you.
Yeah.
But, you call me an idiot. Thanks for the call, Nate. And you can check out Nate hosting his show right here on Blog Talk Radio, entitled Inside Wrestling. So check out Nate's show, Inside Wrestling. Thanks for the call, man. That was Nate on the show. And now we're about to hit hour number two. No, I called a majority of fans who were hating on Daniel Bryan idiots. And I said, no offense, but you were one of them. And a lot of these
How can you be offending when you call me an idiot and not offend me? I'm very upset right now. I need an ice cream cake.
All right, go to your ice cream. But The fact of the matter is, they're just a handful of people, and I was telling them from the beginning that Daniel Bryan's going to be the real deal, and I'm proud of him. I'm happy that he is, and I'm happy that he's finally getting a chance to run with the ball. But right now, we are going to take just a short little break, and when we come back, I'm going to give you some awesome stats on the big match at SummerSlam, Daniel Bryan versus John Cena for the WWE Championship, and CM Punk versus Brock Lesnar, and we'll talk a little bit about the history of SummerSlam. We'll give you some of the top moments. We'll talk about the old days when the show was more or less on in the Northeast here, where we are in Jersey and New York and not in L.A. every year. And we'll talk about what that means for SummerSlam in the future if L.A. is just a great host and they keep doing it that way. So thank you so much for joining us here on Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio, and we will be right back. In the meantime, please just fandangle a little bit.
Diva, the first ever PWP babe. You are now listening to PWP Radio.
We'd like to thank Mrs. Diva for giving us that sound bite. Mrs. Diva was our first PWP babe, and she has blown up. Her episode of MTV True Life has aired on MTV, and her Twitter followers have gone through the roofs, and opportunities are starting to open up for Dana a Diva. So congratulations to Dana, sweet girl, and also smoking hot. But we're starting hour number two right here of PWP Radio. And the reason I play that Fandango song during our break sometimes, not only is it 3 minutes long exactly, but I also actually bought that song. I think I was drunk one night, and I decided to purchase that song off iTunes, and everybody was. So that's something I definitely did. So I want to use it. I want to get my money's worth out of it. So we're starting right now our SummerSlam talk, history of SummerSlam, and some awesome statistics about SummerSlam I'm going to kick it off with. And basically, let's break down these two big matches real quick. Let's talk about Brock Lesnar versus CM Punk. The Beast versus the Best, I think that's a brilliant tagline for it. So starting with Brock Lesnar, the man is 2-1 at SummerSlams in his career. Big wins, gigantic wins over The Rock in 2002. Triple H last year in 2012. Those are two gigantic victories, but he did suffer his only loss at SummerSlam to Kurt Angle in a WWE Championship match with Vince McMahon, obviously, in Brock's corner. This was during one of Brock's heel turns on SmackDown at the time. So 2-1 for Brock Lesnar, two big wins, one giant loss. And he's taking on the best in the world, CM Punk, someone who keeps defying the odds, another guy who's not the biggest man in the business, not the biggest dog in the fight, but he continues to get over selling merchandise and probably being the number two guy right now in all of WWE. So his record at SummerSlam is 4 wins, 3 losses. And that's funny because he actually had 2 matches at SummerSlam 2011. Okay, but we'll talk a little bit about that. His first match at SummerSlam was in 2007 with a big loss to John Morrison. He had a feud there over the ECW title. So lost to John Morrison in 2007. A loss to the Big Show in a handicap match where Big Show actually wrestled the Straight Edge Society 3-1, and Big Show still won. And then, as I mentioned, 2011, he defeated John Cena in a match where he was WWE champion, continued to hold on to that belt. It was a title versus title type thing, and Triple H was the referee, but he lost his second match of the night after Kevin Nash came out, sent a powerbomb on CM Punk, and Alberto Del Rio cashed in Money in the Bank, so he lost the WWE championship that night. But CM Punk also has huge wins against JBL, defending the World Heavyweight title, against Jeff Hardy in a ladder match, and 2 wins against John Cena. He obviously beat him in 2011, and then last year he beat Cena and avenged his loss to Big Show in a triple threat match. So if that has any indication whatsoever, I think we're leaning towards a CM Punk victory. But if there's going to be a 2 or 3 match type of deal between CM Punk and Brock Lesnar, I got to lean towards Brock Lesnar winning the first one and continuing his good luck and staying in the winning column at SummerSlam. Now, speaking of 2-1 at SummerSlam, our WWE Championship match is going to be Daniel Bryan versus John Cena. Daniel Bryan's first shot at the WWE Championship in his career that has lasted over 10 years. People don't realize he's been doing this thing for a long time. So in his SummerSlam debut, the sole loss came at the hands of Wade Barrett in 2011. But his 2 wins came against the Nexus. If you remember, Daniel Bryan was an original member of the Nexus. Then he got released for choking that retard ring announcer. What's his name? I can't remember his name. Justin Roberts. With his tie. Choked him with a tie, and he spit in John Cena's face. So Daniel Bryan got released, but came back at that SummerSlam to partake in a 7-on-7 contest with John Cena and company against the Nexus. They ended up winning, but he was ultimately eliminated by the man he suffered his only loss to at SummerSlam in Wade Barrett. And he had a huge win against Kane last year at SummerSlam, who he will conveniently face next week on Monday Night Raw. So it's kind of odd there. There's a lot of stuff going on. John Cena is the man that brought him back in 2010, lost to Wade Barrett that night, got eliminated, lost to him in 2011, facing Kane next week. There's a lot going on that kind of ties in. But he will be taking on the WWE champion, the biggest star in the entire wrestling business today, John Cena. John Cena's record at SummerSlam is 4 wins and 5 big losses at SummerSlam. So he is not in the win column. And anybody who says John Cena does not put people over, this will prove wrong. Because in his SummerSlam debut, and it wasn't in 2002 when his career began, or 2003, he didn't debut on SummerSlam until 2004, had a big win over Booker T in match 1 of the Best of 7 series over the United States Championship. So Booker T put him over. The next year as WWE champion, he defeated Chris Jericho, so Jericho put him over, and that's great. Those are two veteran guys putting the new top dog over, and that's awesome. 2007, they kind of hot-shotted the match, the first match between him and Randy Orton over the WWE Championship, and he won that match, and then he was the sole survivor in 2010 against the Nexus for Team WWE. But the big losses for John Cena at SummerSlam. That was against Edge in 2006 in a match where if Edge got disqualified, he would have lost the WWE Championship. This comes off the heels of Rob Van Dam, who just returned to the WWE. This comes off the heels of him having to drop the WWE Championship after he was busted for toking up in the car with Sabu, and WWE was forced to strip him of the title and suspend him for 30 days or whatever it was back then. So Cena lost to Edge in 2006, lost against Batista in 2008 in another match that was kind of hot-shotted, should have been bigger than it was at the time, but they ended up having another one at WrestleMania 26 that seemed a little bit bigger or whatever. But then he lost Randy Orton, got his win back. He lost to Orton in 2009, and perhaps he'll lose to Orton again this year? Maybe? Who knows? But then he put over CM Punk in 2011 and 2012. So out of those four guys that I just talked about, Daniel Bryan, you know, Brock Lesnar, CM Punk, John Cena is the only guy with a losing record at SummerSlam. So those are some stats and stuff for you to ingest here on PWP Radio, and it's something that maybe will have an effect on the outcomes at SummerSlam. But let's just get our early predictions on these matches, just win-loss, who's going to win, who's going to lose, and I'm going to kick it off with my main man, the man of the hour, too sweet to be sour. No, he's not Superstar Billy Graham. He's TLD. TLD, who do you think is going to win at SummerSlam? Will it be Brock Lesnar or CM Punk? Will it be the Beast or the Best, or will it be Cena or Daniel Bryan?
Well, all these decisions are being sponsored right now by my ice cream and TLDWrestling.com, so just wanted to get that out. So my feelings on John Cena and Daniel Bryan. I totally see Daniel Bryan defeating John Cena cleanly. Nothing out of the ordinary, but I'm strongly thinking that Randy Orton is going to ruin the whole party and cash in his money in the bank and beat Daniel Bryan for the WWE title. I totally am looking. That's what my prediction is going to be, to see if that happens. And as far as CM Punk and Brock Lesnar, I'm hoping. Honestly, I would not be upset if either one of them won, because there's more to build to that. If I had to make a prediction, CM Punk will defeat Brock Lesnar somehow, some way. Don't know how he's going to do it. We don't have any added stipulations to that match, which could maybe change my mind. But I'm going to go with CM Punk.
If it's a one-match type of deal, I have to think CM Punk's going to win as well. If they're going to build this a little bit and have maybe the second match at Survivor Series or Hell in a Cell or something along those lines, or even the third match, who knows how they do it. If they have another one, then I think, you know, Brock Lesnar will definitely win at SummerSlam. Toph, man, what are your thoughts on the two big SummerSlam main events? Who's winning these matches?
I think Bryan's beating Cena, and I think Lesnar's beating Punk. This is sort of related, but unrelated, mostly because Randy Orton has Money in the Bank. The one thing about Money in the Bank that's kind of annoyed me is there's a rule that originally WWE used to follow, but ever since 2011, they've kind of thrown this rule to the wayside. You win the Money in the Bank match, and you get the briefcase. When you have the briefcase, you can use this contract to cash in against the champion. But there was a third rule they used to push a lot. And in recent years, this rule has kind of been pushed out the window, and I'm very upset about it. The third rule was, if you remember, the champion needed to be made aware of the fact that Money in the Bank was being cashed in. That was the rule. If you remember, in those original cash-ins, they made sure the champion was aware that another title match was taking place. This happened when it was cashed in on Cena. This happened when it was cashed in on The Undertaker. This happened when it was cashed in on Edge. This happened when it was cashed in on Jericho. But when Del Rio cashed in on CM Punk, it didn't happen. Del Rio just came to the ring. He gave the briefcase to a ref. He kicked Punk in the head. Punk wasn't even on his knees. Like in the previous cash-ins, the champion always got to his knees. Like he was always standing. Punk wasn't even on his two front feet. He was on his knees, just got kicked in the head. When Daniel Bryan cashed in on Big Show, he was also unconscious, now on his knees. And when Ziggler cashed in earlier this year, you know, that was the first time they went back and followed the rule of, you know, Del Rio, he was aware. Like, he clearly saw Ziggler coming down. They informed him he was having another match. So if Orton does cash in, I'm curious as to what direction they're going to do. You know, is it just going to be a RKO out of nowhere, or are they going to actually inform the person that's being – I know it's kind of a pet peeve, kind of, but it's a rule. You know, they introduced that when they first used the Money in the Bank, but – it seems like sometimes they want to follow that rule, and sometimes they're like, eh, don't worry about it.
Yeah, very good point. Very good point. They used to always have like the ring announcer announce that it was happening or something along those lines.
Yeah, and the referee would, like, you know, go back and watch it if you can. Like, the referees, each Money in the Bank cash in, the referee would inform the champion, and they would always get on their legs. Like, they would be exhausted, but they would always, the ref would help them get up to let them know that a championship match was taking place. And they've kind of ignored that in recent years. So depending on whether or not they follow this rule, it makes the prediction different, because an aware Daniel Bryan or an aware John Cena could possibly beat Randy Orton. But if they don't know he's there, then, you know, they'll get an RKO out of nowhere. No pun intended.
That's a pretty big pet peeve. a very, very big pet peeve.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, John, give us your thoughts.
I'm kind of with you guys. If it's one match, Punk. If it's multiple, Lesnar. And, yeah, I'll take Bryan with the clean win and then the RKO out of nowhere to solidify the Orton heel turn. As far as the pet peeve, Edge was actually out on his back when Punk cashed in on him. Batista bombed him. Punk picked him up, GTS'd him, and he was done. You know, so they kind of not always
being cashed in.
They've always announced it, though.
No, they don't. They didn't announce it when CM Punk got cast in on by Del Rio. It just happened. Look at it again. Del Rio came out.
Okay, then that's the only one then. Because even Taker got announced on Taker when Edge cashed in on him after Henry destroyed him. And Taker was kind of just barely pulling himself up, you know. And Del Rio came down with a referee. So, you know, but, yeah, that's neither here nor, you know, I guess with the Del Rio thing, that was a total nightmare. Real quick, though, Jay, you did say Bryan never got a shot at the WWE title. Him and Punk actually feuded last year over the WWE title before SummerSlam. They had about
three matches
on pay-per-view.
Good point, Yeah, I didn't really, I was thinking that they've kind of built it like it's his first major opportunity at the championship, and that stuff just kind of slipped my mind, so thank you so much for correcting me right there.
So far out of mind because they booked it so far down the card because, you know, Cena Laurinaitis had a main event.
Yeah,
last summer.
Yeah, you know, every single time Punk was on the card, he was, like, in the mid-card. That's why so many fans called him a European champ last year, because that's what he was before he turned heel or whatever it was he did later.
I wouldn't go that far as a European champ, but I get your point there. So SummerSlam is coming up. It's taking place once again at the Staples Center in Los Angeles, August 18th, 2013. Two matches are booked, those two big matches we just kind of broke down. We'll continue to discuss them in the storylines going on throughout the next couple weeks leading into that big show. We'll also have a SummerSlam postgame show right here on the network. That'll be our official, basically official, within a day, our official one-year anniversary of Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio. So that will be absolutely awesome. Can't wait for that. But let's talk a little bit about the history of SummerSlam. You know, it started in August, basically, in 1988 at Madison Square Garden. And this show was, like, broadcast on pay-per-view first. It was a pay-per-view show. It wasn't like, you know, the Rumble or that was on USA Network first or anything along those lines. SummerSlam was absolutely huge when it started, and it was first headlined by a huge tag team match between Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage versus Ted DiBiase and Andre the Giant with Jesse Ventura as the guest referee. And we all know in that inaugural event, the Ultimate Warrior, man, who has just kind of made his quasi-return to the WWE Universe, was able to defeat the Honky Tonk Man in just about, I think it was like 30 seconds or something like that for the Intercontinental Championship. A lot of big things happened on the show, some big matches, and definitely kicked off that brand in the right direction. So we'll start it off here with TLD, man, let's talk a little bit about SummerSlam history. What is your favorite moment in the history of SummerSlam?
Well, my first SummerSlam that I ever watched, that was my very first wrestling show in 1991. And that's probably one of the most remembered SummerSlams at Madison Square Garden. That was the first time I ever watched the WWE on tape. And I was watching that, like, almost around like WrestleMania time. Like, that's how far back I was when everything was going on. So when I watched that show, I was hooked into pro wrestling, and I'll never forget that. And then 92 was just even better with the Bulldog. 93 wasn't as strong, but then 94 was very good. And I just got into I became a huge wrestling fan, and I always go back to 1991, and I always go back to Bret Hart and Mr. Perfect, one of the best matches I could watch all the time, almost every day. It was just one of the best matches of all time, and that was the match that basically convinced me that I wanted to watch pro wrestling, and I'll never forget that show, and that, you know, Virgil winning the belt, and then the Boss Man doing the sending good old Mr. Taser Man to the paddy wagon. And then the two matchmaking hell and heaven match, or not really match, but wedding. But it was just, overall, that was just one of the coolest SummerSlams, I think, of all time. And you had a lot of great people on that show. Legion of Doom won their tag belts, and that was the big moment for them, winning every major tag belt at the time. Yeah, you couldn't ask for a better roster at that time, and you couldn't ask for a better show than SummerSlam 91.
Yeah, SummerSlam 91 was definitely awesome. My early memories of SummerSlam are the videotapes, the original videotapes I have that my dad taped for me from the pay-per-view, because he was a giant wrestling fan when he was around. He passed away in 1992. So I literally have SummerSlam 88, 89, 90, and 91 on taped directly from pay-per-view VHS. Old school, man. Definitely awesome stuff. My earliest memory of SummerSlam has to be the stuff with Hogan and Beefcake versus Savage and Zeus. You know, I don't really remember SummerSlam 88, but I know I definitely watched it. I have it, but I remember Hogan and Zeus and all that stuff that happened with Macho Man in 1989, because it's literally my favorite storyline in the history of professional wrestling. And it was just great that they involved Zeus and kind of put this no-holds-barred thing into the WWE show. It was brilliant at the time. It was something that was really unprecedented. It wasn't like WCW working in RoboCop or whatever the hell they did to kind of counteract that. But it was awesome. Zeus just seemed like a scary, unstoppable monster. And those promos that Savage and Zeus had, I just recently was watching WWE On Demand, and they had the old primetime wrestling shows leading into this. I think it was last summer I was watching them, leading into this card. And just those promos were freaking phenomenal. They were so much fun, so brilliant, so awesome. Zeus just stood there and looked like a scary son of a bitch, which he always was. And that's really my earliest memory. But my favorite memory, and people are going to give me heat for this, I guarantee it, but I was really, really into pro wrestling in 1993 in the Lex Express, man. I loved Lex Luger. I thought he was awesome. The second coming of Hulk Hogan in my eyes, because when Hulk Hogan left, I thought he just had disappeared from wrestling. He was never going to come back. Little did I know he appeared in WCW about a year later, but the Lex Express to me was definitely ahead of its time, I thought. You know, a lot of people think it was cheesy and everything, but just the concept that this guy is traveling around the country, setting up different events in different areas, not even going along on the tours with WWE all the time. He was sometimes going to different towns on his own and doing these promotions for his big match against Yokozuna. That, along with the slam that happened earlier in the year, it was just absolutely phenomenal. The only thing I'd go back and change is I'd give Luger some kind of clean victory over Yoko on that pay-per-view. But obviously they didn't see the money in putting the belt on Luger at the time. It was a downtime for WWE, but I freaking loved the Lex Express. And any of you new fans out there, before you bury it, from what you heard about Lex Luger, go and check out some of that Lex Express stuff. I thought it was absolutely phenomenal. How about JCD, man? Your thoughts on SummerSlam history and some of your favorite moments and memories?
Oh, God, I'm going to be the old man here, aren't I? I can tell you, I remember 88 perfectly. It was on a Monday night at the Garden. That's when the first few SummerSlams were held. I thought it was great that Warrior beat Honky Tonk Man because of the fact that, you know, Honky had run the belt for so long, and poor Brutus Beefcake could never catch a break. He was supposed to get the IC title in 88. They pulled him for a feud with Ron Bass. Then he was supposed to be perfect in 90 and shatters his face on Hogan's boat. I think 90, if you look at that card from top to bottom, is probably one of my favorite ones. You had Warrior Root in a cage. You had Hogan Earthquake. You had Tornado, who I loved, Kerry Von Erich. I thought Von Erich was so great, but that's a different story for a different day. Beating Perfect. You had the Hearts beating Demolition with LOD coming out. Power and Glory destroying the Rockers. It was just top to bottom, great show. Sapphire turns heel on Dusty Rhodes. You know, just a great show. That's one of my favorites. O2 is just probably my favorite, though, of all time, because I was also there at Nassau Coliseum, and you want to talk about a hot crowd. That card from top to bottom, I don't think there's ever been a better SummerSlam, even with what they put together this year, than that card in 02. That Shawn Michaels match, you know, him coming back and not knowing what the future held was great, and just the way we were so hot for Lesnar, even in the parking lot, the chants of Rocky sucks, chanting kill the midget when Angle beat Mysterio, and, you know, cut my lawn chants to Mysterio that broke out in Nassau Coliseum. Yeah, that was a great show live. I'm not, you know. So, yeah, O2 is probably my favorite one of all time.
I'd say that SummerSlam 2002 is probably the greatest card that WWE has ever put on. You know, you think about it from top to bottom. I'm looking at it right now, Angle versus Mysterio, Flair over Jericho, Edge over Guerrero, the un-American Storm and Christian, who are two just phenomenal wrestlers, over Booker and Goldust, RVD over Benoit, the Undertaker defeating Test, which was actually pretty cool, seeing the storyline, how, you know, Undertaker was going all America on us and shit. HBK over Trips, and obviously Brock over The Rock. Definitely one of the greatest shows and cards of all time. If you're a newer wrestling fan out there, I really can't urge you enough to go back and brush up on your wrestling history, because there are a lot of new fans out there that only know the John Cena era, the Randy Orton era, what's going on today. And, man, I still go back and I get an education. I just watched, on a different note, I just watched Super Clash 2 the other night from start to finish. And there was a match between Kurt Hennig and Nick Bockwinkel that was all just headlocks and hip tosses and takeovers and backslides and stuff like that. Completely old-school match. But I was on the edge of my seat the entire time. I wasn't the least bit bored. I absolutely loved it, because then you had an awesome ending to it. And I don't want to spoil it if you want to go out there and watch it. But, yeah, definitely brush up on your wrestling history.
And here's a little history lesson on SummerSlam 02. That card that you just ran down was probably the third incarnation of what that card was supposed to be. There were, you know, when coming out of WrestleMania, there was one rumor card that was going to probably focus around Hogan and Austin. And then once Hogan turned face before Austin left, then there was talk that card was going to center around Hogan versus Vince and Austin versus Flair. And then Austin left. And then Hogan was still going to be on that card versus Vince. And then Hogan left, and that card got made into what it was. But considering that was probably the third version of what 02 was supposed to be, and, you know, it turned out to be pretty damn good.
Yeah, the whole build to Brock versus The Rock had that awesome match between Brock and Hogan on SmackDown, where he actually thought for a minute that Hulk Hogan was going to beat him and go on to wrestle The Rock at SummerSlam, man. It was definitely a great build-up, definitely cool. I'll never forget the time when Chris Benoit had The Rock locked in the crossface and Brock Lesnar's out at ringside just kind of taunting him the entire time. You know, as far as the fans being against Rocky that night, The Rock really did the honors for Brock Lesnar, and he put over the guy who was supposed to carry that flag for a long time. We know that he left, but now he's back competing in his second SummerSlam in a row this year. Let's kick it over to Toph, man. Some of your greatest matches, moments, and memories from SummerSlam years past.
I'll be honest, I'm not really a SummerSlam guy. In fact, I would even go as far as to call it one of the more overrated pay-per-views. And when I mean overrated, I mean in terms of the longevity of it. When fans talk about SummerSlam, they talk about the older shows, like you guys pretty much covered the older shows. No one really talks about the newer ones. Like, pretty much, after 2002, for me, I just stopped caring about SummerSlam. 2002 was really the last one that I thought was really good. I like 97. That's an underrated one that people don't bring up that much. But the whole, you know, Hart Foundation, heel Bret and Taker. I thought Triple H and Mankind had a really underrated opener in the cage match. That was where the infamous Tombstone botch happened. I thought 95, even though it was crappy, HBK and Razor Ramon had a great ladder match. I actually liked that ladder match more than their match at WrestleMania 10. My earliest memory of SummerSlam would have to be SummerSlam 94, when it was Taker versus the fake Taker and Bret versus Owen, and the championship match, I think it was in a cage and stuff like that. So, you know, I like the older SummerSlams, but the newer ones, like pretty much after 2002, they haven't been that good. I don't like it that it's in L.A. every year. The crowd's dead every year. SummerSlam just does not feel special to me at all anymore. It's just I see it as another pay-per-view. It doesn't really hold any special value to me. If they got rid of SummerSlam after this year, I'd be fine with that.
Well, you say that L.A. kind of kills it a little bit, but it's obvious that something there is working. Because if it wasn't working for WWE, they wouldn't do it. You know, there's no way that they would do this since 2009, having it in L.A. every year. But if you were WWE, Toph, what would you do with SummerSlam? Would you take it out of Staples Center and just have it travel around the country? Or would you give it a different type of area to have a show?
Well, I'm sure when they do their pre-stuff, like how they have all the WrestleMania events and stuff, you know, SummerSlam's their second biggest show, so they have a bunch of mini events before SummerSlam, so I'm sure that's great for L.A. When I mean it sucks in L.A., I'm talking about the crowd. It's consistent. The crowd just hasn't been good. I mean, I remember last year they were hot for Ziggler and Jericho in the opener. Then they pretty much sat on their hands for the entire night, and Triple H, Lesnar, the crowd was so dead. I just remember how dead it was. And then in 2011, the crowd was hot for Christian and Orton. They were hot for Punk and Cena, and everything else they were pretty much dead for. The year before that, they were hot. They were dead for everything, but they were hot for Nexus versus Team WWE at the end. This L.A. crowd has just consistently not really been a good crowd, you know. And for me, I take crowds very seriously. A crowd can make or break a show. When you have an exciting crowd, whether they're chanting stupid stuff or whether it's a hot crowd that's enjoying the product, it can make a show better. But if you have a crowd that's just sitting on their hands, not really doing anything, it just makes the show boring. And just consistently, this L.A. crowd each year has really not been doing it. I remember when Del Rio, when he cashed in, and the very next night on Raw, he cut a promo, and the crowd was just so dead. There's no reaction at all. You know, so I don't know what it is that WWE sees in L.A., but hey, I mean, I'm not running WWE. They want to stay in L.A., they can stay in L.A. I don't think it's fair. I think that by staying in L.A., you're limiting the experiences that other cities could have with SummerSlam. I just don't think that's fair. And if it was up to me, I would get them out of L.A., and they would just visit a different place every year. I don't really like them staying in L.A., to be honest.
All right, well, see, I look at it a little bit differently when it comes to crowd reaction. Maybe I'm just kind of immune to it since I grew up watching ECW, and you want to talk about chants consistently, like that is the birthplace of all these crazy chants that a lot of the time in ECW, they made sense, though. Nowadays, the WWE crowd is just trying to get themselves over by chanting stupid bullshit that makes no sense during wrestling matches. And to me, it's dumb. Like a couple weeks ago in Brooklyn, no offense to you, JTD, but those idiots over there, and I'll say the same thing about the Jersey crowd the night after WrestleMania, that's completely overrated. That show really wasn't that great. But,
yeah.
Okay, for a lot of fans, you can say that maybe it makes the vibe a little more exciting. But me personally, I'm just immune to that shit. I watch the show and I try to enjoy it in my own head, my own way, shape, and form. What the crowd does really just sometimes bothers me, especially when you're chanting Randy Savage during a Fandango match. It really makes no sense whatsoever. And
real quick,
you can say, go ahead.
Real quick, and I'm gonna hop off. The problem with the Brooklyn crowd was they were trying to be the Jersey crowd. That's why you got what you got last Monday night at the Barclays. I'm gonna hop off, guys. I'm gonna help my wife with the baby, so I'll talk to you guys next week. All right.
All right, thanks, John. Appreciate it.
All right.
Later, John.
Here goes JCD. Follow my man, John. Follow JCD on Twitter. It's imperative that you do because he's got, like, no followers. Follow him on Twitter at JCD1219NY. But back to our talk about SummerSlam, there were also a lot of not-so-good moments. I like to always put the positives over the negatives. So I think we might have a consensus vote on this, possibly, but we'll start with TLD. Looking back at all the matches in SummerSlam history, and there was a lot of it. I know you're not a big fan of the series of cards, Toph, but I've seen a lot of great SummerSlams, and growing up watching WWF, I've loved the majority of them. And like you said, you know, the early ones are better than the newer ones, but that's to be, you know, that's understood in a way, shape, or form. But TLD, what are some of the worst moments in SummerSlam history?
I would start off, the one that just blows my mind up was how they did the entire Nexus angle. Because talk about a SummerSlam that I was really looking forward to. That one I was really looking forward to. That one I was really into. And I thought this was the moment that it was going to be a big moment for them to get over. And then when John Cena beat them, it was just like, oh. It just totally killed them, you know. So SummerSlam 2010 was the one that I was, like, really, really looking forward to. I thought that one was going to be the show where, you know, Nexus was going to get over, you know, but it ended up not happening. And that was also, I think, the Strayer Society one, I think, as well, or the Big Show one as well. So it was pretty upsetting when that happened. I didn't understand why. But I liked the fact that Bret Hart was in it. I thought Bret Hart did a great job in that match, better than the WrestleMania match, that's for damn sure. As far as the worst SummerSlam of all time, I would say if I had to pick a SummerSlam that wasn't great, I would have to go, man, that's tough. I would say 95 was pretty bad, but I watched that one a lot, so I really can't say I had a bad SummerSlam. I could say the worst one I attended, and that was the one in 2007 in East Rutherford, New Jersey. That one was the one that I went to, and it wasn't the most memorable one, I would say. It wasn't really memorable. I think there was nothing in there that was really fun to watch in that one. That was just Batista and the Great Khali. That one was Triple H and King Booker. You know, it just wasn't the best one to go to because I went to 97, and I really enjoyed that one, you know. But this one, yeah, this one kind of blew. So I would have to go with that one, at least only for me, the one that I attended. I would say that was probably one of the worst ones. And, I mean, I'm sure there's more moments that I could talk about, but that's the one that sticks out to me.
Yeah, the thing that I liked about, you mentioned the 2007 SummerSlam you attended. I did not attend that show. But I did attend, like, I think the previous Raw was in Madison Square Garden, the Raw before it. I went to that. That was really cool. It was also a Saturday Night's Main Event taping. But the thing I remember about that mostly is you had the return of Rey Mysterio and Triple H in the same card. So that was kind of a cool dynamic. But as far as overall cards are concerned, yeah, the one kind of sucked. It seemed kind of just thrown together. It didn't really make a lot of sense. But I got to say, the worst moment, and I think we could all agree on this, it was on one of the better SummerSlams. It was SummerSlam 1997, and that's when Owen Hart dropped Steve Austin on his head and broke his neck. That really changed the course of not only pro wrestling history, but Steve Austin's life. And I think we're probably, all three of us are Steve Austin fans, and all three of us are probably Owen Hart fans as well. So it was definitely something that, just if you look back at it, it still kind of gives me, like, the heebie-jeebies just watching it. I really don't like to watch it. Then hearing the story about how Owen never called Steve to check on him, never visited him in the hospital, never, you know, said he was sorry, anything like that, that kind of adds a little bit to it. So that, to me, was the worst moment, definitely, in SummerSlam history. It really kind of put a black eye on otherwise what was a huge show with Bret Hart beating The Undertaker and kind of having that Shawn Michaels involvement as a special guest referee. You had the Bulldog and Shamrock on that show. LOD versus the Godwins, Goldust Pillman, and Mankind defeating Hunter in that match where he dropped the elbow from the top of the cage. But, yeah, that one was kind of a black eye. I also didn't really like it, the SummerSlam moment. It involves Austin as well, and that was 1999. I really think that Triple H should have had a match against Austin one-on-one. There should have been no involvement of Mankind. We all know the story where Austin, for some reason, I don't know if it was his ego or what, just did not want to put Triple H over. He just didn't. That was the story, and that's the truth. He didn't want to put Triple H over.
Yeah,
on
that's
the show.
Yeah,
that's very underrated.
Very
forgetful. that's a very forgetful, you know, main event match, I would say, of SummerSlam. That one is pretty forgettable, only because, you know, Mankind won the match, but then, obviously, Mankind dropped the belt at least a week later, and it's just very unforgettable. Yeah, like the next night. Yeah,
the next night.
I totally forget. And then on top of it, we were supposed to have The Rock, Triple H, and Stone Cold. You talk about a match of matches. That was it, and which should have probably took place at that SummerSlam, and it didn't happen. You know, so I agree with that one. That one was pretty bad, too. Also, just the fact that John Cena Batista's first match against each other took place at SummerSlam, when that was clearly a WrestleMania match, you know, that kind of sucked. I was very upset because the WrestleMania match, you know, when Batista went heel, was a hell of a lot better than the SummerSlam match. But, you know, they were both pretty good, but I was just a little disappointed that they had that match, and they didn't even main event the show either. So they had the Hell in the Cell gimmick with Taker and Edge, but still, I thought that match should have been held off. You know, I think the Hell in the Cell already kind of sells the show anyway.
I think at that point, if you look at that card, WWE was kind of a little bit nervous on what to do because he had CM Punk as World Heavyweight Champion. He, let's face it, at that point in time, he wasn't really a proven draw as heavyweight champion. He even talks about it in his DVD. He just wasn't. So you had him versus JBL. You had Triple H versus the Great Khali for the WWE title, you know. And it's not really too much of a draw there. You obviously have the Hell in a Cell. But then you got Batista and John Cena. Where do they fall in the equation? You know, you throw them against each other, and you attempt at having another big draw. And I think they even did the thing where they became tag champs or something and had a feud or something like that. I don't know. It was thrown together. It really wasn't something that's memorable. I agree with you 100%. But let's kick it over to Toph, who has already admitted his disdain for the SummerSlam brand. And let's hear some of the worst SummerSlam moments, memories, matches, whatever you got.
The worst will just be 2001, because anything related to the invasion can just go piss off. Screw that show. Worst moment, though, would have to be SummerSlam 96, simply because Vader was, like, probably the biggest drop ball of the 90s. Vader was just an absolute monster in WCW. He was a beast. He destroyed everybody. And when he was in WWF, his entire WWF run was just horrible. They turned him into a jobber. Vader should have gone over Shawn Michaels, but HBK was an asshole then, and he complained saying Vader was too stiff because, you know, that was just stupid. Vader should have won there. They dropped the ball on Vader severely. You know, me growing up a WCW guy, that really pissed me off when I was a kid. Still pisses me off to this day. So, yeah, that's pretty much it, though. I mean, because I don't really have much positive to say about SummerSlam, but if I had to pick something out that I hated, it would definitely have to be that invasion story and Vader, you know, being a victim of politics in 96.
That really killed Vader's momentum, man. I remember that. I remember being just absolutely thrilled that Vader kind of took the jump from WCW to WWE, because even as a young wrestling fan, I think in 1996 during SummerSlam, I was only 11 years old, I still kind of got it that if you're in the WWE and you're in the main event, you're the real deal. Like, I realized that I always watched Cactus Jack in ECW and WCW, but as soon as I saw him show up in WWE as Mankind, he was more interesting to me than he ever was previously. And of course, I recognized him even wearing the mask. I knew who the hell he was back then, but he was just more interesting to me. And when Vader showed up on WWE TV or WWF TV at the time, man, I'll tell you what, I thought he was really going to be the next big threat to the WWE Championship at the time. And I was never a Shawn Michaels guy. I was never a fan. I always rooted for him to lose. And this was even during a time period where I was just kind of starting to watch a little bit more. I quit watching at WrestleMania that year, WrestleMania 12, because I didn't believe that Shawn could ever beat Bret Hart. And to this day, I still don't. But it's just like I watched this because I was interested in the NWO, and the NWO kind of pulled me back into wrestling and so on and so forth. But, yeah, I agree with you, Toph, man. Vader should have won this match, and it would have been a great underdog story if Vader beats Shawn at SummerSlam and then Shawn somehow wins it back from Vader at some point down the line. Because if you look at those two, there is no fucking way that you can believe that Shawn Michaels can defeat Big Van frickin' Vader. It just doesn't seem possible. But, I don't think we should talk about SummerSlam without talking about what I consider my favorite build-up to any SummerSlam main event, and that is 1998, the Highway to Hell show. Everybody raves about this one. It was a great card from top to bottom. You had the Sunday Night Heat matches back then. You had three matches in Sunday Night Heat that kind of started it off. You had the team of Too Much, which is Scott Taylor and Brian Christopher.
Yes.
They defeated Hawk and Animal, the Legion of Doom, in a dark match in Sunday Night Heat. Gangrel defeated formerly known as Gold Dust. At the time, he was Bible thumping. It was Dustin Runnels. So Gangrel defeated Dustin Runnels. And the DOA, 8-Ball and Skull, who we should know as the Harris Brothers and Jacob and Elijah Blue or whatever, the Blue Brothers, they defeated Bradshaw and Vader, kind of a mishmash tag team. But think about that. Bradshaw and Vader is a tag team? That's huge. But that's your point, Toph, right there. Vader in 1996 is the main event at SummerSlam. In 1998, he's in a dark match. So that kind of sucks, huh?
Yeah, they dropped out Vader. I remember when they brought Kane in, and one of Kane's, outside of Taker, one of Kane's first feuds was with Vader. And they had a few good matches, but it was mostly just Kane, you know, dominating Vader. They wanted to get Kane over as a monster. And I just remember as a kid, when I would go to school, so many of the kids, they watched WWF, but they didn't watch WCW. So since Vader was a jobber in WWE, they thought he was a jobber. We didn't know what the term jobber meant then, but because he lost all the time, they didn't take him seriously. And I was like, man, if you guys only saw, like, his work with Sting and Cactus Jack and Ron Simmons, you'd see how great he was. And I hated it. There was one match where Kane beat him. And then, like, it was like a post-interview after Vader lost. And then Vader was like, I'm just a big piece of shit. I'm just a big piece of shit. And he just walked off. And I'm like, why would you have him say that? That's just so strange. I never got that, you know. To me, that whole thing would just prove, like, if you're not a WWE guy, if you're a guy that Vince didn't create, you're just inevitably going to be – you're never – I'm not going to say you're going to get buried, but if you're a guy that Vince did not create, you're never going to be that guy. That Vader treatment just – yeah, that was really what kind of turned my eyes against the WWF product from a very young age.
Yeah, well, you know, I guess we can agree with that in some way, shape, or form. I think it was smart to use Vader as a tool to get over Kane. I think that's – booking 101 in that sense. But yeah, he was really doomed after that loss against Shawn Michaels. I mean, he had just come into the company, and that was the point where he should have won. But back to SummerSlam 98, man, you had D'Lo Brown. Yeah, just great new talent on this card and new acts and everything, and the Attitude Era was in full effect. So D'Lo Brown defeated Val Venus, retained his European Championship by disqualification. That's when D'Lo was rocking the chest protector and doing his blast.
Chest
people.
Protector, man.
I better recognize.
That was one of my favorite things.
Yeah, that was one of
my favorite
things
that he did.
Yeah, man.
98
was
great, man. Hey, do you guys remember when they were advertising 98 SummerSlam on, like, the Home Shopping Network? Do you guys remember that?
Yeah, man, I remember that very well.
Yeah, that was great, man. I watched the build. They actually had the pre-show on the Home Shopping Network. And then when the show was over, they had, like, post-interviews on the Home Shopping Network. That was just great. But, yeah, 98 was a great show. My favorite match on that card, believe it or not, is Val Venus D'Lo. And the reason I like it is because that match was the perfect example of how great the Attitude Era was, because that match, if that existed today, it would have been, like, on the pre-show. But those guys were so over, like, you know, everyone in the Attitude Era was doing something, you know, even, like, the third-tier guys in the third-tier title, you know, everybody was over, everybody was in a story, you know, it was just a great time to be a wrestling fan.
Yeah, no question.
It was even,
one
thing I remember from that show, too, is the Hair First Hair match. I remember that one. Then they had, like, Edge getting his, like, first match, I think. That was, like, his first pay-per-view.
I was
in the theater for the Lions Den match. I was actually watching that one with Owen Hart and Shamrock, so I was actually in the theater that night because the tickets were already gone by the time I tried to get them. So, yeah, that was a really awesome show. I would definitely agree with that, especially with the ladder match, too.
Yes, that was the post-main event, too. I mean, co-main event, yes.
Co-main event, yes.
Yeah, that's when the Intercontinental Championship was probably at its peak, when Triple H and The Rock were really fighting over it, because you look at what big stars they became. They were pretty much bigger, just as big as any stars from the past, you know, including guys like Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, who also held that championship. But, man, that was a huge match. And this is the storylines going in. Like, before that match, that's when Sunday Night Heat actually mattered. You had to watch Sunday Night Heat to watch the pay-per-view, because I remember, you know, The Rock and The Nation and DX had a big brawl with each other in the ring, and The Rock attacked Triple H's knee, and they worked that into the match. They worked that into the angle. You know, The Rock did Triple H had a bad knee. How was he going to climb the ladder? Stuff like that. So it was a really cool thing, and they had that whole dynamic with Mark Henry in China that was happening throughout the week. That's when Mark Henry started hitting on China and stuff like that. You also had Kane turn on Mankind in the pre-show on Sunday Night Heat. You know, he had Kane just destroy him, and if you remember, he had him in a dumpster and was beating the shit out of him, and then just took a sledgehammer, just threw. Maybe that was after the fact. I can't remember, but he just
that
he
was
beat
on
the
show
of Mankind.
When he did that.
Yeah, that was after the match, but he beat up Mankind and turned on him on Sunday Night Heat, and he left Mankind to fight the New Age Outlaws by himself, and the New Age Outlaws was.
JR oversold that when he hit him with the sledge, and JR was like, "No, no, damn you, you son of a bitch! How could you do that?"
Yeah.
JR was greatest.
Yeah, when you knew that Kane was just literally throwing the sledgehammer into the ground, but yeah, you had that Lion's Den match. It was just cool, and of course, Austin the Undertaker was an awesome build up. And just the match really wasn't that great. If you've seen Stone Cold talk about it, he admits, because he got the shit knocked out of him during it. There was a point in that match where they collided heads and Austin got a concussion, and he just really wasn't there for the rest of that match. But they pulled it off, and it was a great build, and it was a great show. But that about does it for our History of SummerSlam segment. TLD, any final thoughts on the history of WWE SummerSlam?
No, I hope they. I just hope they do a good job this year. I think they're doing a good job building it up for these matches. I think people are generally excited, not only internet fans. I think fans in the audience and will really, really enjoy it. So I'm looking forward to it, and I hope they have a lot of weeks to build it out. We're going to obviously have the post show to talk about it, and I'm sure we'll get a lot of people, especially after our 1 year. We had a lot of people talk about it last year. I think I'm looking forward to this one this year more than last year's. I think what I was looking forward to more last year was more the radio show than I think the SummerSlam, but I'm looking forward to it. And we have some, I think we're going to start a little added bonus for next year, don't you think, Mr. J?
Yes, I was just about to announce this, but let's get to it right now, and I'll give Toph the floor in a second to give his final thoughts. But Toph, you're going to be in on this, hopefully. If you agree, this is the first you're hearing about it, and John as well. We are going to play a little game here at PWP Radio. We're going to call it the PWP All-Stars Challenge, and it's TLD's, you know, concept from his Battle of Wills thing he did with Will Brooks years ago on that show that now is just, yeah, that show that now is just some kind of irrelevant Facebook group, roundtable something, I don't know. But it's something along the lines of, it's going to be like we're going to draft wrestlers. TLD, why don't you explain it? It's your concept. You explain it.
Sure. So basically the idea of it is that each of us are going to draft wrestlers on our roster, and on pay-per-view shows, based on wins, losses, title wins, we will add up a total, and until a certain time of the year, we will actually combine that total together, and whoever wins, wins. And I don't know if we're going to have a – I don't know if it's for bragging rights or for something, but I'm going to try to see if we can do it for something. But it's something along those lines. So basically we will have to have our own – very own PWP draft to draft wrestlers on our show. And once we draft those wrestlers, if they win, lose on the show, how they win, by submission, by pinfall, if they win title, they lost the title, you know, basically that's what it's going to be around. I'm sure in the next week I can draft up some details. And as long as everyone's on the show, maybe we could pick a Wednesday to do it and do our first draft pick.
What do you think about that, Toph? Are you on board for that?
Yeah, sure. That sounds fun.
Yeah, we're going to use WWE and TNA rosters both. And you can pick your favorite wrestlers, or you can strategize it a bit and pick people you're not too fond of, but you have a feeling will be getting some kind of push. It's our own type of fantasy wrestling league. So we're going to have this draft tentatively at this point on the August 13th show. That's a little bit of a week before SummerSlam. SummerSlam's on the 18th this year. So we're going to have it on the August 13th edition of Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio live right here on the air. And then we'll kick it off the night after SummerSlam. So SummerSlam won't count. The night after SummerSlam on Monday Night Raw, that's when we will get it going. But now without further ado, Toph, man, your final thoughts on our history of SummerSlam.
Oh, I just hope that this year they do something with the Intercontinental title. I know in the past the Intercontinental Championship has a very powerful and memorable lineage with the show. And in recent years, they haven't really been doing that with the Intercontinental belt. So I just hope that it finds a way on the card. But it just occurred to me that since CM Punk will be fighting Brock Lesnar, Paul Heyman more than likely will not be with Curtis Axel in the next few weeks because they'll need Heyman to build up his match with the match between Punk and Lesnar, which will leave Curtis Axel kind of, you know, lost in the shuffle. You know what I mean? So I don't know.
Yeah, it's very possible it could go that way. Or Paul Heyman could do double duty. He kind of did that on Miz TV last week a little bit with Axel. And when he left Miz TV, you know, Axel kind of like came out, made his little return, so to speak, whatever you want to call it. But, yeah, that's a good point. We'll see how they handle that in the weeks to come leading into SummerSlam 2013. But before we leave, final thoughts here. I just want to send a shout-out to a fan that just emailed me. And his name is Stan Child. He emailed me on Facebook at facebook.com/ProWrestlingPowerhouse. And so if you're an admin, you can go look at this if you want. I'm going to read the email to you guys. So quoting Stan Child, here's that email. Hello, PWP. I'm listening to all of your podcasts on a weekly basis, and I have to agree with your assessment on the show's obsession and spoilers. 2 hours, and it's a guy who toots his own horn and refuses to admit any mistakes. I listen because I love wrestling and listen to podcasts and music for 50 hours a week at work. Congratulations for working 50 hours a week. I wish I had that much work right now. My opinion is his show is one of the worst. I just wanted you to have a neutral perspective, and I love the Two Core podcast. Keep up the good work, Stan Child. So I'd just like to thank Stan publicly for those awesome comments. The Pro Wrestling Obsession show, yeah, the PWO show is gone. Those guys were just caring about their little Facebook group, doing their own thing, and they had one last show last Friday. They did their final show on our network, and there was not one mention of ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com, not one mention of PWP Radio Network. Nothing along those lines at all. They just did their own little thing. I allowed them to have that final show, but now they're done. They just have a Facebook group. That's all they are, and that is done as well. I do like the other guys from Spoilers, Graham and Ben. They're nice kids, and Lucas as well. But Graham's got a lot of stuff going on, a lot on his table, and he was the main guy I wanted on board. So we wish them well in their future on this this wonderful world of wrestling radio. Well, there are a ton of podcasts out there, and I thank anybody who listens to Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio. We're about to hit our year anniversary, and we're going to make that show memorable. So for TLD, my man Toph, and John JCD Dimaselli, this is Jersey Strong J signing off. CWP Radio, episode number 44. Keep it real, everybody.